We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
Hey there, welcome to Binge the Bucks, a special narrative podcast series focusing on the Milwaukee Bucks 2019 playoff run and part of the Eurostep podcast. I'm Ty Windisch and I'm here with Rohan Kadi, as usual, to break down Game 2 in the second series in the Bucks 2019 playoff run. This is a 123-102 victory over the Boston Celtics to even out the series. This podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag, and the Eurostep is proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. So this game two, as I mentioned at the end of game one podcast, we had our good friend Adam McGee with us. That was awesome. But the Bucks needed a win. Both teams still missing a key guard. Marcus Smart out for Boston. Malcolm Brogdon out for Milwaukee. This game went just a little bit better, I think it's safe to say, huh, Rohan?
Yeah, it went a little bit better. And, you know, it was the start of the end for the Celtics.
Yep.
It was a time where the Bucks realized, hey, we just It was like a pride thing as well as like you have to do this because it's like they got blown out on their home court in game one. You can't let that happen for a second time. You can't even lose a second time on your home court because if you're down 0-2 as a higher seed and then you head on the road, that's putting yourself in an extremely tough position to come back from, if not like essentially impossible.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. But fortunately for these Milwaukee Bucks, they had no trouble, you don't really take home court back, but they at least don't go down 0-2. Milwaukee's offense finally gets working. The big three, Chris, Giannis, and Bledsoe, all scored 20 points. You know, I didn't go look before this. I really should have. I feel like Bucks very rarely lose in games where Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Eric Bledsoe all score 20. George Hill adds 10 from the bench. We get Nikola Mirotic starting for Sterling Brown. Sterling has another bad offensive showing. He also suffered from back spasms in the last game. But I think really the story of this game, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, Rohan, before we dive into the, you know, quarter by quarter breakdown. The Bucks were able to wrangle Kyrie Irving, and it seemed like that, and part of that, you know, might not be all Milwaukee responsible for Kyrie's bad game, but I think this series really kind of swung for the Celtics end on how well Kyrie played. And after a tremendous game one, he did not have another tremendous game in this series.
Yeah, it was that. He was making a lot of tough shots in game one, and they weren't necessarily falling for him in game two. And it was really weird. We'll get into this. It was weird.
It was. So Anyway, two Celtics shoot well overall, Marcus Morris and Al Horford, but they did not shoot enough to stop Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kyrie Irving from having tough days. So first quarter, the first play of the game is, and really I think this was very concerning based on my note after the note of what happened was, shoot me into outer space, please. The first play of the game after the Bucks win the tip is an insane Eric Bledsoe pass to nobody on a drive that basically gave Jason Tatum a free dunk. And it's like, after the bad Bled concerns from game one of this series, from the last Boston series, this might be up there with the, besides like an injury, the worst ways possible to start a crucial playoff game. That was rough to see.
It was very concerning. Shoot you into outer space is an accurate sort of feeling after watching that first possession. Because on the rewatch, like I know what's going to happen because, you know, I've watched these games before. But yeah. It's sort of like, oh, God. It's sort of like you get taken back to the moment. And in the moment, you're just like, are you kidding me? Like, is this really the first possession of this game where it's essentially a do-or-die game?
And what's funny is, and not funny, I didn't remember this game starting off pretty rough, just like game one. Brook Lopez hits a crazy three. Marcus Morris hits an absolutely bonkers long two as the shot clock expired that looked kind of like a travel, but whatever. And then some more stuff happens. Al Horford hits a three on a pick and pop. All of a sudden, it's 12-5 Celtics. And this felt like a danger zone. Like, oh my goodness, is this really going to happen again? Luckily, Chris Middleton, after not a great game one, a solid but not great, he cooks Jaylen Brown on a drive for an and one. He hits some corner threes in this game, which wasn't really used to seeing Chris in the corner with any sort of space, but he did hit some corner threes. And the Bucks at least prevent, you know, they don't go down 21-10 like they did in game one, which was a better start, at least.
Yeah, I think the story of this game was Milwaukee's three-point shooting. And it came in this first quarter, we got like a good sign of it because they made five threes. Lopez and Middleton combined to make four in the first quarter, which was their combined total from game one. So already there, you're getting a massive improvement on the shooting end, because one of the matchups that we talked about from the game one podcast was Brook Lopez and Al Horford. And if Brook Lopez isn't necessarily hitting his shots, it's hard to necessarily have him in the game. Like, he's still going to make like a solid impact as a floor spacer and as a rim protector, but especially against Al Horford, the rim protection kind of gets taken out with the pick and pop, and the offensive spacing can only do so much if you're just going to miss every shot. So him hitting his two threes early in the first quarter, like that was a great sign, and just it was a telltale sign for what was to come in the rest of the game. Because in the first quarter, like, Boston still came out and they were looking like the team they looked like in game one. Like, they were locked in, they were focused, they were executing. They were putting on a clinic, and Milwaukee wasn't backing down and like sort of getting frazzled like they were in game one. Like, in game two, they were keeping pace with it, doing what they needed to do, and that's what kept them in the game.
Yeah, I think the three-point shooting was huge. I think the Bucks shot like 48 threes in this game, or 49 threes, and shot 40-some percent from deep, which that obviously will help. They shot 47, and they shot 42.6% on those 47 attempts. So certainly a huge swing there. This game, again, Chris gives the lead on the corner three. The Bucks are up 16-15 in the first quarter. At one point, Giannis posts up on double team, misses, gets the board, turns it over while trying to shoot. Again, just that tunnel vision that we certainly have seen a lot less this year, cropped up again in this game as well, although not as much, clearly. Marcus Morris did work in this first quarter. He nails a catch and shoot three, give the Celtics the lead back. And then Chris with a beautiful, aggressive pull-up three-pointer in transition. The lead comes back. But it was really a back and forth first quarter. The Celtics do end up on top, 30-23. One thing I did notice, we talked last podcast about not adjusting enough to Al Horford and letting him get to his spots. They actually over-adjusted to stop that at one point in this first quarter. The fear of Horford ends up with him getting double team when there was absolutely no need for it. Just two Bucks ran at the same time on the perimeter. And I forget who it was, but somebody just leaves Gordon Hayward absolutely wide open in the corner, and he nails the three-pointer that was way, way too easy. And I don't think that was the last play of the quarter. No, Bledsoe hits a layup at one point. But the Celtics do take a 30-23 lead to cement their first quarter. And not a great sign, not a great first quarter to start this game after game one.
No, it was not. It was sort of the fears being realized of, even if the Bucks are sort of, you know, playing within them, like within themselves and doing what they need to do, that it still might not be enough to beat Boston. And that first quarter kind of showed it. What we didn't really see a lot of was what really killed the Bucks in game one, which I mentioned earlier, which was Kyrie's shot making. Like, he goes 0 for 6 in this first quarter, I think. And just, he was making those shots. It's the classic Thon Maker expression. It's a make or miss league. And he was missing them.
Love that reference.
he was missing them in this first quarter.
I think Kyrie had 11 assists in game one. Do you know how many he had across the rest of the series combined?
I don't know off the top of my head, but if I were to take a guess, I would say probably like 15.
21. So a little bit more, but you look at 11 in game one and then 21 over the next four games. I mean, there was this series, I really think, and I think this is something interesting. I wanted to bust it out in the game one pod, but just didn't have a good place to fit it in. This works better. Both of these teams were kind of the same way, in a way. They really went with the offensive focal point no matter what. Like, if Kyrie wasn't playing well, this Celtics team, with him playing, and obviously they won a lot of games without him, it was controversial, but when he's playing a lot of minutes, when he's running the offense, the team really went with him. You know, they were gonna have a hard time overcoming a bad Kyrie game or four in a row, because they didn't know what else to do. You know, they weren't a grown team. They had clearly a lot of talent around him. Even, you know, post-injury, Gordon Hayward is good. Obviously, you know, a year later, Jason Tatum's a superstar. But Kyrie, the way he ran that team, the way, how integral he was, those guys didn't have set routines. They didn't know what to do when he was struggling, really. They weren't prepared to do anything. Kind of the same way the Bucks were with Giannis last year. You know, they didn't have that second thing. They didn't have the safety valves. And if, like we saw game one, Giannis, despite padding his stats in the fourth quarter, had a bad game and nobody else was ready to do anything. That flips for the rest of this series, but that is interesting. At least that's how I've been looking at it, is you can really see these two teams kind of go with the best guy. I mean, it's really, and sometimes the Bucks would lose even when Giannis did have a good game, but if Giannis is flummoxed and in the muck, this version of this Bucks team really did not have anything else to do, and it seems like the same kind of went for Kyrie.
Yeah, there was a lack of other creators, because the Celtics were so used to Kyrie doing everything that they couldn't really, they didn't know what to do when he wasn't doing as well. Like, compare that to the season before, where they went to Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals without Kyrie or Irving and Gordon Hayward. Like, Jason Tatum was running the show. Terry Rozier was had a big role. And then those two started, they got reduced in the regular season, and they didn't really have the reps to sort of, you know, get themselves going when Kyrie wasn't playing well. So that played into their downfall a lot. And I guess you could say the same thing about the Bucks, because when Giannis isn't doing well, Chris Middleton, we've mentioned, wasn't as unlocked as a creator and as a shot maker as he is this season compared to last season. Eric Bledsoe sort of fades away when playoff time comes around. You didn't have a guy like Dante. Malcolm Brogdon at the time was injured. George Hill sort of still had a comparatively reduced role than what he does now. He wasn't as comfortable in the offense as he is now. So you didn't really have like those options. Like, again, Brook Lopez, you didn't really post him up to get a shot. Robin Lopez wasn't on the team to go get a shot. You couldn't do really much of anything if Giannis wasn't playing incredible.
Right. No, for sure. And I think, thankfully, you know, for the rest of the series, he really did play pretty at least close to incredible. Second quarter starts with the classic no, yes, Bledsoe 3 over Al Horford. He kind of just stood there and then took it. That didn't feel like a great shot, but it did go in. There was a Nikola Mirotic block, which is like seeing a hole-in-one in golf.
I think rare. It's rare.
It probably, you know, honestly, maybe if you do the math. Bledsoe with some good driving. Like I said, I accidentally said Bledsoe had a good game one. That was not the case at all, but he did have a pretty solid game two. Horford with a drive and flush in this game. We talked about it last episode. Wild to see Al Horford doing like athletic, useful, very effective stuff when with the Sixers. He just has not looked anywhere near that. Giannis gets a huge block on Tatum after he... So Tatum posts up Pat Connaughton, gets a pretty easy bucket. He goes through the same thing. Giannis is just like, no, you're not posting up my guy Pat twice. I just got a great real estate tip from him. I can't let you do this to my man, Pat. He stuffs it. Giannis had a slam right after that that does not make sense. Like, it looks like, I think it's on Baines. It looks like Baines did a pretty good job and stymies his drive to kind of gets him away from the rim. And then Giannis just like reaches up and dunks it. And everyone kind of stood there like, how the hell did he do that? Like, he seemed way too far away. That's the Giannis effect, I guess. But that just gave the Bucks a 2-point lead. No, they were within two. The Celtics had actually taken the lead. Excuse me. The Celtics do win the first quarter, 30-23. I think I mentioned 25. That. But that wait, what?
30-25.
Oh, is it 25? Mm-hmm. Oh, my bad. They took a 30-23 lead at one point. Then the Bucks did score that Bledsoe layup. There it is. Finding it, but the Bucks are only within two after that. So again, this is one where I feel like when I look back, I tend to paint things with like a simplistic brush. I looked at game one as the Celtics blew out the Bucks pretty soundly, and then game two was vice versa. But you know, the Bucks were right in game one for a good while, and the Celtics, you know, leading this game at a sort of middle of the third quarter or second quarter, excuse me, point as well.
Mm. It was the Bucks figuring it out. Because even in game one, the only reason they sort of stayed afloat is because they were, like, Nikola Mirotic went on a streak. Like, that's the only reason they sort of made it seem like it was a competitive game.
What a weird sentence.
Again, came in a loss, doesn't really matter. peak Nikola Mirotic in a Bucks uniform isn't a loss. But in the second quarter, it was the Bucks figuring it out, like I just said. It wasn't, they weren't staying in the game because they were getting, like, lucky hot shooting. It was because they were playing well and getting their normal good shots. Like, they were figuring out how to play their game within this elite Boston defense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Chris hits a double clutch three, which was pretty cool. That does give the Bucks the lead in the second quarter. Giannis drives through Baines to open it up a little bit. Giannis was just having more success driving, but still, I still think he's so much better this year than last year, which is crazy considering how good he was last year.
He was the MVP.
It is. Yeah, and soon to be again, hopefully. The Celtics do end up taking the lead back, though. Chris hits another corner three. This was weird to see Chris finding corner threes. That not something defenses give up anymore, but he was getting them in this series. A Jaylen Brown putback gets it within one. George Hill to end the half. A beautiful pull-up three. I love watching George Hill play basketball.
That play,
I just think it's
that play
so
I
much
thought
fun.
Was a perfect encapsulation of the rest of the series, like game two through five, because George Hill was making a deep three because Kyrie didn't get back on defense.
Mm, yeah, great observation.
Because like he shouldn't have gotten that good of a shot.
It was so easy.
Yeah, because there was no one on him because there was only Biggs back. I think it was Baines and Morris, I think. We're back on defense, and like George Hill just like stutter stepped to fake that he's going to the rim, and then just took a wide open three.
Yeah, and then he was a little bit behind the arc, but not like crazy far.
Yeah, it wasn't like near the logo or anything. No, but it was just like the only reason he was that wide open is because Kyrie wasn't back. Like he was just lazily getting back.
Yeah, and this was not a fast break. Like this was the Celtics make a bucket, and Giannis inbounds right to George Hill. Who just literally, like you said, I mean, dribbles up to his spot, maybe a foot, foot and a half behind the 3-point line, sort of on the shoulder. I don't know if that's a real term. The side, not the corner, like halfway between the corner and the
wing,
the middle. Wow, the wing. Thank you. I'm unable to speak at this point, but yeah, it was just like such an easy shot for him to dribble into. It's just like my God, like George Hill should not be left that wide open. I mean, this is before. He leads the league in three-point percentage for most of this past season, but still, like, no one is a good shooter. Just wild to not have Kyrie or anybody there. But, yeah, that was maybe one of those little signs that things were not going to be going well for the Celtics anymore in this series.
Yeah, for, like, again, the second quarter, Middleton went 3-for-4 from deep.
That helps.
Yeah, it does. It was the crazy Middleton game of this Boston series, compared to like what was that? Every game last like the season before.
Yeah, the 2018 one was wild, man.
Yeah. Like I mentioned on game one, I thought we were gonna get it in game one. We didn't really, but we definitely got it in game two. And the second quarter, he had 11 points on 4-for-6 shooting from the field, including, like I said, 3-for-4 from deep. Like that's how the Bucks got the lead, because their second best player showed up.
Played like it. Yeah. He ends up shooting 7-for-10 overall from deep in this game. So if you were betting a Chris Middleton three-point attempt was going in, you were going to win that bet. And speaking of bets, with currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB on, you might think there's nothing to bet on. But you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline.ag, still has hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on. Or you can let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack. It's all open 24 hours a day, and it's all completely online, including their $750,000 poker series. If you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the weather. Visit their website and join today to receive a full 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Just be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline.ag, your online wagering experts. All right, Rohan. Third quarter, where this thing gets better. The Bucks are up 59-55 at halftime, so they have the lead, but this thing is not yet open up. And it seemed like at first it was going to be a pretty tough game. You know, it seemed like it was going to be tough for the Bucks to even the series out. Third quarter starts with a typical trademark overly tough Kyrie basket, but then Bledsoe answers with one of his own. You know, Giannis gets a layup in transition where sort of tunnel vision-y, but it works out this time. He passes when he gets stood up by Marcus Morris, finds Brook Lopez for, I forgot how many tough, beautiful Brook Lopez threes there were back in the day. From watching this year so closely and being so fixated on it, you're just used to Brook not finding that much success from deep, but he was pulling up and hitting everything. But still, I mean, this thing was not broken open yet. Horford hits a catch and shoot three, pull within four, 66-62 Bucks. Rohan, when watching this third quarter, did you expect the Bucks to be up more by this point? Because I honestly did. Like, this turned from a close playoff game into a blowout very quickly.
Yeah, I was surprised at how long it took to necessarily get to a blowout status.
Get to Gershon Yabusele.
Oh, what a thick boy.
I have a take on this later, but I'll save it for the fourth quarter breakdown.
Okay, well, I'm excited. Yeah, I was surprised it took this long and not like how quick it changed, because it seemed like the Bucks were sort of doing what their peak of their powers was, because you had Giannis going off. You had Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe sort of going off, but also secondary to Giannis. So that's like sort of, that's the hierarchy of this team. And that's, if you're getting all of that happening, you expect the team to be, you know, winning by a lot of points, because if all of the Bucks' big three is going off and the rest of the team isn't just completely, like, you know, if they're on the court and, you know, like doing NBA player things while those three are going off, it's hard to necessarily lose. But the Boston was, they were staying in it for a bit. They got a lot of tough buckets out of Marcus Morris. They got, Kyrie actually hit a couple shots. Aaron Baines was doing some things. It was just, it was weird, but then it all fell apart. Once Boston showed like a little bit of weakness, Milwaukee just pounced, and it was three after three after three. Like, everyone was getting in on it. Bledsoe, yeah. Middleton, Lopez, Giannis went
Giannis,
2-for-2.
Two big threes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He even did a shimmy after the second one. He did the little shoulder shimmy after he hit a walk-up three on Aaron Baines.
That was a pretty move, yeah. Marcus Morris, just going back quickly, 6-for-8 from the field, I think 3-for-4 from deep in this game. So he actually, I think, led the Celtics in scoring. But yeah, so my notes are like all these back and forth stuff. You know, the Bucks are up 4. Bledsoe hits Milton in the corner for a 3. He drains. The Bucks are up 10. Kyrie, like you said, making some tough shots. And it's just all caps. Giannis for 3 again. Bledsoe for 3. Suddenly the Bucks are up 20. And that was really like they just, like we talked about the three-point shooting, they made a bunch of threes and just ran away with it, and you could tell Boston. It was like when that Horford block, if that maybe demoralized the Bucks and ended that game, that run to end the third quarter was the same to the Celtics. There was no coming back from that. The effort wasn't there on defense. The Bucks end up winning that third quarter 39-18, a 21-point lead in one quarter. And that made the fact that Boston ends up winning the fourth quarter 29-25 pretty irrelevant. I mean, Lawler's Law came real early in this fourth quarter, and that ended this game.
I'm pretty sure Boston basically, at one point, like, it took them around like 3 minutes to score in the fourth quarter, like, at all.
Yeah, no, I had that almost 4 minutes, actually, I think.
Dang. Because I know they had a little bit of a drought to end the third, and it extended into the fourth, and then the Bucks are just actually making shots while the Celtics were not making shots. Like, at the end of the day, if you're not making shots and the other team is, you're not going to win. And that played out.
Correct. No, when the Bucks reach 100 points during that drought, they're up 100-73. And yeah, whoever ran the game had a graphic. Jaylen Brown hit a tough pull-up two right after they showed the graphic, which is pretty much how that stuff goes. But I think it was 3 minutes and change the Bucks were scoreless for, the Celtics were scoreless for. I got ahead of myself. The Bucks were certainly not scoreless for this time. They put the game away with it. Bledsoe gets a nice stuff on Kyrie in traffic, which was good. Good to see Bledsoe winning a matchup against a Celtics point guard, even just for a second. Terry Rozier head faked Pat C so hard Pat C jumped out of bounds. Both feet out of bounds, Rohan. Like, love Pat.
That's the Pat C story.
Does stuff well, but totally the Pat C story. Just trying to do a little too much, whether it's, you know, dribble driving not well or literally leaping out of bounds. You have to be impressed at the athleticism. It almost looked like he actually jumped over Terry Rozier, which maybe he did, but just scale it back a little bit. Just jump straight up, Pat. Like, don't leap out of bounds.
I mean,
please.
He's always trying to go for that block and leak out dunk.
He is. And, you know, props to him. He's always going to bring energy. There's no question in that. Mm.
But it's just like, if you're doing that, the offensive player can just get a sidestep three whenever they want.
Yep. Which happened right there.
So, you know, it's tough because, like you said, he brings a lot of energy, but is that really the best defensive?
Sometimes. When it works, it is.
When that play happens, it's just demoralizing for the other team. Yes. But that is a rare occasion.
When it doesn't, it's 3 points for the other team. You win, lose, or you big. You win big or you lose big sometimes. Nico Mirotic hits a three after Pat C.
Look
offensive rebound. Good play. Pat with a good effort play. Nico looks up to heaven after making the three, and I just put relatable content. That's also how I was looking. You know, I think it's important as we look back. We've trashed Nico Mirotic a bunch, and we will more. At the time, I was really rooting for the guy, and not just because, of course, him being really good would make the Bucks, you know, a title favorite probably. Maybe not favorite with the Warriors still rolling, but a lock to get to the finals at least. I felt bad. I mean, he's a good player. The Bucks didn't give up a lot to get him. And in this time, I was like, he just needs to get hot from three. That's it. But there were some defensive shortcomings I was not paying enough attention to.
Yeah, it was a lot of... It's easy to look back at it and be like, wow, he was a traffic cone on the defensive end.
Yep.
But in the moment, it's just sort of like, if he can get hot, it's over for any opponent. Yes, he just never got hot.
Really,
because his career reputation was just like, he's a great shooter. He was an essential part of that New Orleans Pelicans team that swept the Blazers. And if he could just do that for the Bucks are unstoppable. But he never did that.
I do think part of it comes back to Milwaukee not having a second center.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at when Nico was good on the Pelicans, he was more of a 3-4 on those teams. And the matchups helped. I mean, they were really good against the Blazers. The Blazers don't have a wing who could really... They didn't then have a wing that could hurt you. Like, as long as you don't have to put Nico on Dame or CJ, it really doesn't matter. This Celtics team has so many wings. It's the opposite of that, basically. But that made him look a little better, I think, for sure, in that series. But also, like, he can't play the five at all defensively, and the Bucks didn't really have options besides Brook Lopez and a little bit of Giannis. So that doesn't help him, to be in fairness, but... He did not play well.
No, he did
not. The
Bucks won 31. Shocker, Ty. That is the hottest take you've ever had on this podcast. That Nico Mirotic did not play well for the Bucks in the playoffs. Thank you. This is that. Yeah. I need to cool off from that.
Blazing new trails here. on the brighter side, the Bucks go up 31 in this game at one point after a George Hill three. Nico misses three point blank looks before getting the fourth to fall at the basket. Just an encapsulation. But my last note, I totally forgot how big Gershon Yabusele is. Like, he played in game one too. I went back and looked, but the Celtics wore black, and black is a slimming color. I can attest to that, and this is proof. My goodness, like, you're watching him in game two, and I don't mean to be rude. I don't mean to shame anybody. I just forgot the size of the lad. Like, wow.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, my goodness. I like, no wonder thing. The guy could do some work around the post.
I thought the same exact thing. The craziest thing was he was running out for a dunk in the fourth quarter during garbage time.
Like, yeah.
Props to him, man. But wow. Is he still in the league? Okay.
No, I don't think he is. What's kind of like, they had two huge guys. Semi Ojeleye is very big too, but he's big and like
yeah, he's ripped. Jacked.
Like, Semi Ojeleye is shredded. Gershon, not as much. I think, was his nickname French Draymond at one point?
Really?
I think it was, because he was born in France. 16th overall pick. No, he has not played a game in the league since this playoff series, actually.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that's what the Celtics fans called him, though. French Draymond, which, not so much.
French, yeah, wow. That's, yeah, I definitely remember having that take, because it was just, I was just shocked that an NBA player would look like that.
Like, I'm trying to, the Celtics had another guy who was actually better, like a veteran who was there. Oh my, I'm totally blanking on who it was now. I'll go back and look while I talk. But
like in this series?
But yeah, no. Like a couple years
earlier. Glenn Davis?
Like, I think in like the first. No, I remember Glenn Davis. I thought they had another guy who, like, he had a famous quote. Like, they asked him, like, Jared Sullinger.
Ah, yep.
Because he used his butt to rebound, and somebody asked him, like, somehow, I don't know how you ask a guy about that. Somebody did. And he's basically like, I got it from my mother. I always thought that was a hilarious all-time quote. So that's this game. The Bucks do end up, rolling, evening out the series. What was your, if you have any fourth quarter stuff that we skipped over, feel free to share. But otherwise, what was your series vibe?
I think that Giannis was figuring it out. And that's just, he found the seams in the defense. He found out that when Al Horford was off the floor and Aaron Baines was in as the only big, that you could get a basket anytime he wanted. And that even when Al Horford was on the floor, he realized he can pass out to shooters who will knock it down. And that was it. He realized how he needs to play within this game. He realized that Al Horford is good at defending just like stand-up baskets around the rim and at straight line drives, which he sort of took a little bit out of his system against that, because he realized, like I said, that Al Horford can defend them. So he went and found other things. He got more skillful in his drives. He got more seams like in the defense for passing lanes. He figured out the team mentally, and when that happened, it was all over.
Yeah, I think that's a definitely fair take. Certainly a lot more optimism, but I still, at this point, was not. I don't think, I have to listen back. Maybe I was. Maybe I'm lying. But I, like, you still don't have home court. Like, the Celtics at this point just have to win their home games. So I think, I'm pretty sure, and at least on rewatch, I thought I would be more like, we got to see them win in Boston now. And that is not easy. It ended up being kind of easy, but it's generally not easy. So I think that was like one of the big things, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the year before when these teams played, didn't the Celtics win all the Boston games, and that's why they won the series?
I think so. Yeah, it was the home team won every game in that series.
Yeah, and the Celtics had the home court advantage, so that was... So you're kind of looking at it like, oh no, like we... All of a sudden now we have to win in Boston. That was not something the Bucks could do last
I think
year.
I remember feeling a bit confident because, like we talked about on the Game 1 podcast, like that was the best that Boston could offer. And we saw them sort of, like the Bucks sort of match those, the things that sort of, you know, got them, because the pick and pop wasn't really killing them in this game because they, you know, they sort of realized, oh, we can counter this by, like, you know, not dropping as deep and, you know, with Brook Lopez actually playing well, like his offense, like, sort of mitigates the defensive concerns. So as you're not getting straight negatives while Brook Lopez is on the floor. So like the strengths of Boston were being figured out by Milwaukee, and we'd already seen peak Boston. I was a little worried, I remember, about the shooting, because I think this was, what, a franchise record for playoff threes made by the Bucks in this game at 20?
Oh, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. They made 20 threes. So if you're doing that, like, can you do that consistently? Like, that's not something you can really predict necessarily, because, you know, there's so much variance in shooting. So I was wondering to see if the Bucks could win without shooting like a monster amount of threes, then you're talking. But if the only reason they did win was because they were getting such hot shooting from their entire roster, that's what would be concerning. And now that I'm saying this, it's weird to talk about the Bucks shooting like a franchise record or something amount of threes to beat the Celtics.
Yeah.
When it's turned out that now every team that wants to beat the Bucks has to make like a franchise record in threes. It's a weird retrospective.
So we were right about that series in 2018. The home team won every game, so the Bucks were 0-4 in Boston, obviously why they lost the series. Fun trivia, who led the Celtics in rebounds in game 3 of that series?
Game 3 of that series.
Bucks win. They saw their first win, obviously.
Was it John Henson?
It was on... Nope. Not the Celtics.
Oh, Celtics,
the Celtics.
Sorry.
It was on 420.
Nice. Yep. Was it... Shoot. Was it Baines?
Greg Monroe.
Oh my God.
Greg Monroe, 12 boards off the bench. Not
God,
really a good game for him.
I forgot about that.
But, yep, I also did forget about that. So, friend of the Bucks, formerly, Greg Monroe, led the Celtics in
that season,
that game.
Too. He was on the Bucks that season.
Yeah.
And then got shipped off for Bledsoe.
And then cut, right?
Yeah. I think he was bought out.
Yeah, well, yeah. Whatever. It's the same
thing. And then he went to what? He went to Philly, Toronto, and Boston in that season?
Yeah, like the whole Atlantic Division, basically. All the good teams. And I had to pull up the Jared Sullinger quote. So this is in 2015, I think. Yep, December 2015. Jared Sullinger, Boston Celtics forward, had totaled 36 rebounds over his last two games. Somebody just asked him why he has been able to get so many rebounds. That's all they asked. So they didn't ask about his derriere. Here's the quote. "My mom," Sullinger said, per Taylor C. Snow of Celtics.com. So this came from the Celtics website. "That's a blessing my mom gave me. She gave me her booty so I can give all the credit to my mama."
That's an all-time quote. I can't believe I've never heard that before.
Yep. Jared Sullinger just being real honest. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's all I've got for the game now. I can't top that at all.
Yeah. No, I can't top that either. Oh my goodness, that's amazing. I don't know where to go from there.
I think all we can do is try to wrap this up, because we are not going to have any analysis that's more interesting than Jared Sullinger's reason for rebounding.
Yeah, well, I think we've covered this game pretty well. We've talked about Jared Sullinger and his mom. That's wow. Yep, the Bucks win this game. What was it? 123-102. So the Bucks and Celtics trade, you know, 20-point blowouts to start the series, which is always great for the NBA. But it was fun. This was a fun game to watch. I'll say that, because you sort of see the story of the Bucks sort of like struggling in the first quarter, and then they sort of like fight their own demons and sort of like, you know, rise from it. So it was a fun game to watch, like narrative wise, and it was very fun to cover on here. But yeah, if you don't have anything else from this game, I guess we can wrap up this podcast by saying we'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of Binge the Bucks. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a rating and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and make sure to tell your family and friends about the podcast. Make sure you check out all of the other podcasts across the Blue Wire Podcast Network. They're all pumping out great content during this hiatus in sports. And I guess all I can say now is please stay safe, and we will talk to you next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.